Oh, this is fun. Well, this is MSO News Sports, and this is Steve Carraway with Unfinished Music with Greg Verga, and we're about 20 minutes late, but we finally got Steve on. Steve, welcome.
Hey, nice to be here.
All right, we got Steve's mic. How's your mic now? All right, this is the way it's gone. Steve, first rocker I've heard all summer. We've had a lot of folk singers in here and so on. Is that, now the voices, is that all yours, or who are you singing with?
That's me.
All of yours?
Yeah.
Fantastic. So tell us the genesis of that song.
That song, well, I'm a big fan of both Elvis Costello and the 60s stuff. So Dave Clark 5 kind of rears.
Oh, I love the DC 5. All right.
Yeah. And so that's what that song was about. It just kind of lightning in a bottle. I wrote it in about 15 minutes and demoed it in an hour. And it basically, the version you hear is almost exactly like the demo.
So you did the whole thing in studio yourself?
I played, let's see, everything but the drums on that. And some of the keyboards.
But you did the vocals.
I did all the vocals, all the guitars, all the bass.
How many voices are there?
There's probably, let's see, the lead vocal that's doubled in a lot of places, three harmonies.
Wow.
I usually double tracked all the harmonies too, fatten it up. And,
all right, yeah. So I know nothing about this stuff. How long does it take to do one song to record it that comes out like that?
You know, it depends on how much coffee you have. Yeah. And then you can just keep rolling. But it takes a while. It takes a while because what you do is, you do a lot of the recording. When you do the vocals, then you got to, if you're doing it all in one day, it's a bad idea because your ears get tired. You're better off taking a day, stepping back, coming back and listening with fresh ears, and you hear things that you didn't notice the first time.
That's awesome. So. I love it. You got your mic fixed there?
I think
there
I'm back, yes. Sorry, everybody, for being a little late today. We had some technical difficulties, but this is Greg Berger here with Rick Moore on Unfinished Music. And as Rick came to my rescue and told you, our guest today is Steve Carraway, and that was When I Change Your Mind. And so, Steve, why don't we go right into something live?
All right.
Just tell us the title, and we'll talk about it after.
This is called Fool's Gold, and it's brand new, and it won't be released until probably next year, but it's going to be on a Stolen Lions album, which is my band. So
All right. So it's premiering here right now. So during the extended setup session here, we were talking about 12-string guitars, and I love it perfectly on the first recorded tune we had. But for those who can't see right now, you are playing a 12-string acoustic. So
yes, they loom large in me legends, as it were.
I think they're wonderful to just help fill things out. I mean, you say that's typically what you use when you play solo?
When I play solo, yeah. I actually I picked this up. Or my wife will tell you, she bought it for me. She bought it for me when I released the album that actually that first song was from, because I wanted to go out and promote the album, but I couldn't afford to take a whole band.
Yeah.
So I wanted something that was big sounding and, you know, had the jangle, did the whole nine yards. So.
Yeah, well, the jangle, that's the key word. That's
Oh, yeah.
It's excellent. It's like stepping back in time. I think the 12-string... I mean, I'm a 12-string fanatic, so I just think it's not used as much as it should be.
I agree. I agree. This is actually the recorded version of the song will have an electric 12 on it.
Oh, beautiful. So. And, well, why don't we talk about gear for the gearheads that are out there? Is the Danio that...
I have a... yeah, it's a Dan Electro Hodad 12-string, which, as far as I know, I'm the only one that has one. I've never seen anybody else have one. It's just happened to, you know, went into Guitar Center looking for an electric 12, and I was thinking about doing the Dan Electro double neck.
Yeah.
And they didn't have one, and the guy brought the Hodad out, and it was, you know, it's just a much better guitar than what I was looking at. But, yeah, very happy with it.
Oh, great sound. It works perfectly on that song, and this acoustic works great on filling out the live stuff.
We have all the files loaded, so we got all your songs. Oh. Okay, we finally made it.
Yes.
Jeez, what a day.
And we appreciate anybody who's out there, everybody who's out there still listening, and call your friends and tell them we are back live, and tune in. So, so why don't we jump right into another live song? What have you got for us?
All right, this is it's a song... it's called Life of Crime. It's written from the perspective of a guy who's in jail after a heist that went bad. And you'll kind of get an idea.
All right, interesting. Let's hear it.
He's talking to one of his co-conspirators, but she's no longer has anything to do with him. Your letter today, and I can say that I'm hardly surprised you made a clean getaway and you left me high and dry. We both knew it was all going wrong. Someone had talked to giving up all our plans too late. By then, but we went ahead and it got out of hand. You were mine, but I waited too long, out of time. True love is so hard to find, and I got so lost in this life of crime.
Lost in a Life of Crime. Is that the actual title?
Life of Crime, yeah.
Life of Crime. So is that available?
Not yet. That's another one that actually the band hasn't even heard that one
Oh,
yet.
Wow. So we're going to be getting a lot of sneak peeks here today.
Yes. Yes, we will.
So, well, the stuff that is available, do you want to give a little plug?
Sure. Yeah. My last record came out in 2014. And the band is Stolen Lions that played on it, but it was released under my own name. So, but that was the first time that we had recorded as a band. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to be doing an actual Stolen Lions LP, player.
So the last album, untitled Upon This Rock?
Upon This Rock, yes.
All right. And it's available through your website?
It's CD Baby.
All the usual.
Amazon. It's all over the place. All major services.
Excellent.
And the same as Hurricane Season, which came out in 2008. That's available on all major services.
Super. So I think we're ready to go with another recording, Rick?
Yeah. My mic down. You want a gone, gone, gone?
Gone, gone, gone. So we'll listen to that and talk about it after.
All right. Here we go.
Yeah.
We're back. That was Gone, Gone, Gone by Steve Carraway. So, Steve, what are the secrets of this song?
Well, the secrets... Am I on?
Yes.
I can't really hear myself, so...
How's that?
Check. Hey, oh, there I am. The secret of that song, it was actually... it sounds like it was written in the 60s, but it was actually written in the 90s. And it was a band with my bass player now, currently, John Jazz Abbott, called Big Trouble. And we decided to do something kind of Beatlesque. Mm-hmm. And that's how that came about. But it's actually, the song is about a dream.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the verse and everything came about a dream. So.
Well, Beatlesque it is. I mean, as I was saying while it was playing, I love the bass. I mean, as a bass player, that's the first thing I zoom in on. But also, it had that Ticket to Ride drum sound to it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a combination of Ticket to Ride and Tomorrow Never Knows. I wanted to do something in an homage, mm-hmm. you know. And the backwards guitar solo is played by Michael McMahon, who I'd played many years in a band with. But that kind of added a whole different thing too, you know, doing the backwards solo.
Yeah, that's kind of it's fun to do that kind of stuff. A lot easier on the computer than when John Lennon was a little bit not with it when he messed up the reel-to-reel and discovered the backwards sounds. But, that just makes it. It sounded like stepping back in time.
Excellent.
So, do you have another new song you'd like to preview for us?
Let's see. I can do one. I didn't practice this today, so I hope it goes well. It's called On the Side. It's kind of an icky subject matter, but it's told from the perspective of a kept man. I'll just say that.
All right, let's hear it.
Excellent lies, expand the tone, shadows of dawn round your eyes. We've seen this all before. You give less and I want more. I need to be real after years of smoke, alone in the dark like a ghost. Well, you go home to him. I slowly go out of my mind again. You make me high as any jug I've ever known. You make me high, but I'm coming down. I'm just the man on the side. Live in false hope, but I'm on the edge. Try as I'm not to kick you, my heart just won't. I think I'll be alright till I hear that knock on my door tonight. You make me high as any jug I've ever known. You make me high, but I'm coming down. I'm just the man on the side. You give up just enough, I trust enough to keep my world from crumbling to dust. But it's not enough.
Unfinished Music with Steve Carraway, and that was Man on the Side.
On the side.
So, Steve, I'd like to ask people when they come in, what is what's their songwriting method? So how do you go about writing a song?
Usually, and it can happen a bunch of different ways, but usually it starts with just getting a guitar part or, you know, sometimes I write on piano, and getting something that I like the sound of. And then working a melody in with that, and then usually the lyric is the last thing that I do. So every once in a while, things will happen all at once. In the case of the first song that we played, you know, that everything happened so rapidly, you know. But of course, I was writing in a style. I was writing in that early '60s style, so they made it kind of easy with that.
All right. Do you collaborate with people ever, or are you typically a solo guy?
Typically solo. I have collaborated. The first band that I had any type of success with, which was called Night After Night, recorded success, we were managed by Barry Gaudreau, and the guitarist Joe DeLeo and I co-wrote everything that we recorded.
Mm-hmm.
We actually did a bunch of stuff for MCA Records, and then they passed, and we were shopping it when we lost our major management. We had West Coast management, and that's when everything fell apart for that band. But, you know, well, such is life.
Yeah. Well, you had mentioned before the show that you're from the Midwest, so what brought you here to Gloucester in particular?
To Gloucester? Gambling.
Gambling?
No, I worked for the first casino ship that sailed out of here, and I was living in Lynn at the time, and a friend of mine who was a keyboard player, he got a gig playing on the boat, told me about it. I got a gig playing on the boat, and then a couple weeks later, they made me a cruise director. Not the cruise director, but a cruise director. And I started working on that, you know, and then I worked for the one out of Lynn, Horizon's Edge. I did that for, you know, 4 years over there.
Wow, interesting way to get here.
How'd you get here from wherever you were before?
What, from Toledo?
Yeah.
Well, my father worked for Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company, and he was on the fast track, so we moved every year, 18 months.
Ooh.
So I was born in Toledo, lived there for a whole 2 weeks, and then we moved to different towns in Ohio, then Pennsylvania, then Maryland. And then when I graduated from high school, he got the promotion to take over the service department for all of Goodyear. And he left. They went to Ohio, and I stayed put. And, of course, I moved about 27 times since then. But
well, how long have you been in this area?
In this area, I moved to Massachusetts in 1984.
Good to have some roots.
Yeah, yeah. And my youngest, he's lived his whole life in Gloucester, so that's good, you know.
I can identify.
Go, where was your hometown? I go, I don't know.
Army brat. My dad retired here, and I'm so glad he did. It's the most beautiful spot on earth.
Oh, yeah. So then you understand.
I get it. Yes, I get it, yeah.
It's just like being in the Army.
Absolutely. Well, it's the
better food.
The traveling minstrel as well, you know, so that's cool.
All right. Well, why don't we hit up another recording, Rick, whatever, potluck, whatever one you want to click.
Okay. You have a preference, Steve, that you wouldn't want? All right.
Well, you know what? I don't think you've played anything from Upon This Rock. Yeah, actually, if you play that song.
Okay, it's not identified as that, so
We have a
Scented Letter, Big Star, Home Fries, Prospect in Washington?
Well, Prospect in Washington is about Gloucester, if you want to put that on. We're talking about Gloucester.
A lot of interesting landmarks mentioned in there.
Yes.
Let's do it.
Yes.
I'll look for Upon This Rock. Yeah.
I'll explain what goes on in the song afterward.
Okay. Uh-huh. All right, here we go. So this is Steve Carraway Prospect in Washington.
Christmas is just 3 weeks late, and I just wanna hang with my friends. John is back to school in the fall, and the party ain't over till then. I used to work the boats with my pa. He just sits and prattles all day, waiting for the other shoe to drop, drinking Pabst in the free and cool shade, while the mortgage in the bank don't get paid. Shouting, going on in my brain. The hard knock on my door, and the cops out there calling my name. Don't cry, I'll be alright. Though it was the hardest thing I've ever done. Home free, cause no one saw me on the corner of Prospect and Washington. Yeah! The rum line last Monday night. Paulo's bitching about the MFC. Some moron starts to disagree. I'm surprised he made it out in one piece. I paid my tab and followed him out, walking towards the water in the dark, heading for the bars down on Rogers Street. Prick, thinking that he was so smart, he never made it past the Jonah.
Right, so I think those of you out there listening who have ever driven through Gloucester or lived here, you're probably familiar with some of the things that were mentioned. So why don't you tell us all about that one?
Oh, okay. Well, it's fiction. I just want to put that out there because it's the song is sung from the perspective of a guy that murdered somebody, and up to this point, he's gotten away with it. At the time when he sings the song, it's disaffected youth trying to look, big, and guys that are heroes to him. And he takes out somebody that's, you know, defending the fishing policy that's out there right now in Gloucester. So, but there's all kinds of landmarks there for people from town. You know, the corner of the song itself, Prospect in Washington, it's a corner about two blocks from my house. The rum line, the Joan of Arc statue, you know. This Pratties makes an appearance in there.
I didn't hear Pratties. I heard the other stuff, though.
And, it's like a map of the stars for Gloucester. You know?
Yeah, I guess that's one way it works.
There you go.
But, now back me up, guys. Now, don't you think that would sound great on an episode of Wicked Tuna?
Oh, sure.
I think so. Just if there's anybody listening out there that knows those guys, you know, please put that out there.
There's got to be somebody out there who has a connection to Wicked Tuna. So pass it along. That's Prospect in Washington. And if you want to get the rights to it for a small fee, just contact Steve.
That's right. That's right.
All right. You want to hit us up with another live song?
I don't know. I wasn't really prepared.
We got plenty more recorded here. Yeah, whatever you want.
Yeah, let's jump into a recording.
When you want done.
How about, it's your call, Big Star, Home Fires?
Yeah, why don't we do Home Fires? Okay. That's I'll preview it a little bit. This is, it's about a two-soldier household. And in the instance, this is the husband saying goodbye to the wife as she goes off.
All right. Home Fires, here we go.
Slide on the water and a seagull's cry. You're standing stiff at attention and silent in line. I'm holding up the baby so she can wave goodbye. She'll be stuck with just daddy for a little while.
I got a question about the musicianship on that sound. First of all, all your stuff sounds so rich. It sounds so well done in a studio. It sounds like a million different instruments. So that's awesome. It sounds great. The lead guitar you had, was that also the same guitar that sounded a little bit like what do you call a steel guitar? You had a little bit of a
no.
What is a steel guitar?
There's a steel. Michael Bean, who's actually a phenomenal player on anything with strings. Can play mandolin. He plays bass. He's played bass for years in different bands, but he decided to start doing more, lap steel, and he's a very good pedal steel player. And I wanted him specifically for a couple songs on that record.
Okay.
So.
And then you did the lead after.
I did the lead.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it's hard for me to tell the difference, but it was from low to high. It was such a big range.
Yeah,
and the vibrato and stuff. Awesome, awesome stuff.
Thank you.
Love it.
You very much.
Love it.
All right. So you have you mentioned you've got the album coming up with Stolen Lions. Been rehearsing it. Haven't started recording it yet. Have any other project performances coming up that people should keep an eye out for?
Nothing coming up right on the cusp. You know what I mean? Where I took a job with the federal government.
CIA.
Yes, the CIA. No, it's with a branch. Let me just say, a branch of the federal government. Nothing with guns.
Okay.
And it's taken a lot of my time, mm-hmm. and I haven't really done that much booking since I started in April. And I rather than book something and not being able to show up, because of work, I've just been holding off. But hopefully, in a few months, it'll ease up a little bit, and I'll have more time
so I
can do some things. Yeah. But I have been doing gigs, mm-hmm. Just not as many as I normally. I used to work a couple days a week. Playing out, but it's just been quieter lately.
Yeah, 8 days a week. Right?
8 days a week. That's when I work during the day, is 8 days a week.
Those pesky jobs, they just ruin everything,
Yeah, they don't want to hear that you have something else to do.
When did you start? How old were you when you started all this? When you started learning guitar, singing, and so on?
I started singing in school, doing the Pirates of Penzance, I think it was, in school, and on a stage. And then I started playing guitar a year later because I needed to be able to communicate with the other guys that played instruments. I didn't have, that's basically when I started, and I haven't stopped. And that was a long time ago. That was a long time ago.
It's all relative. It's all relative, Steve.
Ah, okay.
Keep it young. And I like you mentioned like the DC-5. How did you ever get a hold of them? I mean,
I was around.
Oh, I don't think so, but that's okay.
I was around.
Okay.
I was around. Yeah, I was a big fan. I saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan.
Really?
Yes.
Steve looks good for his age.
Yeah.
A glass of formaldehyde a day. It works wonders.
He's actually 75.
I doubt that.
But Dave Clark Five they were nipping at the Beatles' heels for a while.
Yeah, right. they were a big band. I remember they had a movie out because every '60s band had to have a movie, and there was Catch Us If You Can.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. How has technology changed for you? Because if you are of an older generation rather than a millennial or what do they call it, Gen Xers. But. In terms of playing the instrument, I'm sure it's the same. But what about the technology? You guys were just talking a minute ago about some software and all this other stuff. So how have you learned that? How's that changed?
Well, I'm still, one step up from banging on a rock when it comes to that stuff. But as far as, just the things that you play through now, I'm using a Vox modeling amp, which, I get everything that I want out of it. And where before, if you wanted different sounds from different amps, you had to bring different things in the studio and try that. But I was able to do a lot with just, simple stuff.
And when you do multi-tracks, I mean, if you're doing a voice over a voice, back in the day, I remember you had to do it on a reel-to-reel. You had to cue it up again and do it, go dub over it and cue it to another tape machine and so on.
Yes. Uh-huh. And I was doing those in those days, too.
Okay.
Yeah. Things have changed a lot. Back when... if you wanted to, I worked with Barry Gaudreau as a producer as well. He produced the Night After Night stuff, and he would literally manipulate the tape to move it to different sections, you know.
Oh, sure.
It was, you know, it was an art, and it's a lost art now because everything is done digitally, and it's so much easier.
People don't even know what. I wonder if Greg does splicing. Do you remember splicing?
Oh yeah,
it was actually cutting the tape.
Cutting the tape.
I used to
taking it out, putting it in.
I used to do that.
Really?
And I mean, back in Eric Dahlgren's class, we used to do stuff like that. Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. So it is. It is cool. And the, you know. In the 50s and 60s, when rock was young, and probably in the 70s, people would do the instrumentals, and then the singers would go into a separate booth, and they'd listen to the instrumentals through headphones and do their... Do you still do something like that? Do you lay down track after track?
Yeah. Most of what you do is, you know, when you're doing basic tracks, like and a lot of the times I would play an acoustic guitar and just sing a rough vocal. Mm-hmm. To guide the bass player and drummer and, you know, whoever else was playing on the basic tracks. He'd guide him through that one.
Oh, I see. Yep.
And then...
You get their sound.
You get them. And, okay. You know, and then usually vocals are done close to the end of the recording, you know. And hopefully, you know, I try to do things one or two takes, you know. But sometimes things can take a while.
Do you, and I'm sorry, Greg, got one more question out of my curiosity. Do you, when you get, let's say, an instrumental the way you want it, do you fiddle with it? Do you take stuff out and
put, absolutely.
You do, okay.
Yeah, you're mixing and you're constantly listening. You know, there's a lot of stuff, there's a ton of instruments on a few songs on Upon This Rock. And, you can either, it's a matter of either getting the right blend or you start pulling things away.
Mm-hmm.
So like everything that's recorded for a track, for a song, doesn't always make it to the final mix.
Right.
It's, you know, it's there, but it's, you know, pulled out.
One final question, I promise. Is there a point? No, but you know, I've seen movie people and people who write books and so on, and they're just never, they're always making re-edit. So is there a point when you just say, this is it, baby, this is it? Or is it like, nah, it's okay, but I might come back later? Or a little combination?
Well, there is a point where you have to walk away. There are some people that can edit themselves to the grave.
Right.
I have a buddy of mine that's been making an album for the last 25 years.
Oh, jeez.
Because he won't finish it.
Yeah.
It's like, finish it and move on to the next thing. You know what I mean? On the couple of records that I've done, there's a couple songs that I, you know, maybe in retrospect would have done things maybe a little differently, but I can live with it, you know, because there's always going to be something else. You know, you go on to the next thing. You know, life is too short to labor over every little tiny detail.
And if you get to play live, then you can experiment.
Oh yeah, you can do too. Yeah. The songs keep growing even after you record them. The band that we play with now. I mean, we do a lot of the songs from those albums, but you know, they've taken on a different life. They've taken on they're being played by these people, and it's great. You know, nothing should be static and just stay the same. It's got to grow. You know,
right? Well, and a lot of the huge acts. I mean, there are certain bands. Well, they not so much these days. But the Cars, when I saw them, they were like note for note was identical. You know, and other bands come out, and it's like they mix it up.
Right.
Yeah. When I saw U2 last year, I mean, they played Sunday Bloody Sunday with a guitar and a snare drum marching. You know, so I guess if you play the same thing for 25 years, you might get a little bored.
You're looking for something to make it lively for you.
Wasn't Led Zeppelin not notorious but famous for not playing the same way live as they played on their albums?
There's a ton of bands. I mean, that really expanded on what they did. You know, you don't want to paint yourself into a corner.
Must be a feeling too when you're out there with a certain song. You feel differently sometimes singing the same song. You get a different feeling as you're singing it.
Yeah. I mean, you find things like Bob Dylan was always famous for people would go, well, "What's this song about?" And he'd go, well, "What do you think it's about?" And they'd tell him, and he'd go, "Yo, there it is." And it's like, you know, you can find that even as the writer of a song. There's certain things that I'll sing, and I'll, all of a sudden I'll go, oh, well, maybe that's what that's about. You know, because, you know, it's stuff from my life, but, you know.
Yeah.
Now I try to step outside because I have never been to prison. So the life of crime is good, is just good. It's an idea.
Well,
you know what I mean?
I understand so, as an artist, because I asked Livingston Taylor about some certain lyrics, and he almost got defensive, you know. It's like, don't ask about it. It's up to you what you decide what the lyrics mean to you in a song. Meaning he was telling me that. And but the like prospect and where you get it from, I think, is what I was trying to ask, but it came out stupid.
A lot of songs, I guess, are like a Rorschach test. You know?
Yeah, you know, people will go, well, what's this next song going to be about? And I'll go, I don't know. When I'm done, I'll tell you. Because it's seriously, you start off writing about one thing, and then it becomes something else.
Do you have your own tunes in your head? You know how I get stuck with a song?
Sometimes. Sometimes, and that can get really annoying.
Okay, but
you know, when it's your own stuff. It's like, oh, that's one of mine.
So have you had tunes stuck in your head of yours that you haven't written yet?
I've had some ideas, some things that, you know.
And you can hear it.
And you can, I can hear it. Cool. I actually, the first time I actually wrote a song, and I never completed it, but I was 11 years old. I was riding my bike, and I'm kind of like singing to myself and humming this thing. And all of a sudden I went, I've never heard that before. It was my own thing.
Cool.
But then I went and played baseball, you know, or something. I didn't think anything more about it. But, you know, that was the first instance where I realized that I was actually creating something that I hadn't heard before, you know. And I'm sure it came from something, you know. It might have been a snippet of something that I had heard, but I made it into something of mine, so. Which is all songwriting is anyway, you know. Everybody's taking and borrowing and stealing pieces from other things and making it work, you know.
Right, and you must have heard about the recent Stairway to Heaven lawsuit, and they won. They prevailed. Yeah,
it was a reach.
But there's just so many chord progressions out there.
Exactly. You can't. That's why you can't copyright a chord progression. It's impossible.
Right. But then again, we were talking about All Things Must Pass earlier when you first got here. There was no denying Fine was ripped off.
I was just talking. My mother-in-law and I were talking about that, and it's just so blatant. And it was completely unconscious. He didn't actively go out there and say, I'm going to steal He's So Fine.
Yeah.
He's saying, My Sweet Lord, da, da, da. Oh, that was great.
Yeah.
You know, but he wasn't thinking that it was something else already. He just...
The one I love was when John Fogerty was sued by his old band for...
Sounding like him.
For plagiarizing his own music.
Yeah, his publishing company.
That was his buddy Saul Zanson.
Run Through the Jungle. Yeah. Give me a break.
Well, because to get out of his contract, he basically gave up all his rights. And then,
that wasn't the... You know, John is kind of known for being a little hot-headed and probably, I'll show you. Yeah, sure, go ahead. You know, didn't work.
No, it didn't. Well, but yeah, that Zans, he got sued because he was basically... criticizing the guy. It wasn't very camouflaged who he was talking about.
He put a song out on this one solo album called Zants Can't Dance. It was all about the guy, you know.
Yeah. I think he's changed the title since on the
You want to do one more recorded song here, or what do you want to do?
Sure.
Yeah. We have Big Star.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's about one of my heroes, Alex Chilton. So
okay. Let's get it going. Oh.
This is Big Star from Upon This Rock by Steve Carroy.
Talking heads on TV.
All right, that was Big Star by Steve Carraway. So, Steve, there a story behind this song?
Yeah, actually, it's Alex Chilton, who was the 15-year-old lead singer of the Box Tops. In the 70s, yes, 15 years old. In the 70s, he had a band called Big Star that didn't sell a lot of records, but they influenced just about everybody that heard them. The stuff was like Beatlesque, but it had its own thing too.
Yeah.
And I wrote this song right after he passed away. He, I think, had cut his grass or something like that. Came in and sat down and had a heart attack and died.
Oh wow.
And it just, you know, so the whole song is written about Alex, but it's, you know, about, you know, let's go listen to some Big Star, put on some Big Star.
Cool. And Stevie Winwood was 15, too, wasn't he, when he started?
When he started with Spencer Davis, yeah.
It's really crazy. Those guys, how do you do that? Oh, that's talent.
It's great. I've seen some people that are just, it's mind-boggling how good they are at that young age, you know. You know, I should hate them, but I don't.
you gotta respect them.
There's room for everybody. Your stuff is awesome, Steve.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
Awesome
thanks.
Stuff.
Well, definitely for the opportunity to come.
Yeah, we appreciate you coming. We appreciate most especially your patience.
Yes, thank you.
As we worked through some technical difficulties. But why don't you give a plug to your upcoming project where people can find more info and follow it?
All right. Unfortunately, I don't have any live dates to push at the moment. But Stone Lions is going into the studio to you know start tracks on the new album. We have a Facebook page, you know, Stolen Lions.
Okay.
And yes, it's just as it sounds. And just so people know that, you know, the Stolen Lions, that's not just a name that we just pulled out of thin air. I had two white stone lions on my front porch. And one morning, about 1 o'clock in the morning, I woke up, which is an odd time for me, not either to be still up or getting up. And, I heard a car pulling away, and when I took out my bulldog in the morning, the lions were gone.
They'd been stolen.
They'd been stolen off my porch, and the weird thing is, it wasn't the only the only white lions that were stolen from in the neighborhood. There was other people around the corner that they had theirs taken.
Wow!
And we actually got one back. He got stolen again a week later. So there's a real Stolen Lions. That's why that name is there.
It's from the great Stolen Lions heist.
Yeah, see? I'm surrounded by crime. that's the best thing to do is to look on the Stolen Lions page, and I'll have updates on the progress of the album and other live dates as we get them.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Steve. We appreciate you coming in, playing for us, letting us play some of your material, and talking to us and giving me more inside information about songwriting that I'm stealing from all my guests from my stuff.
Okay. And I'm a font of useless information, so just
excellent.
Give me a call.
All right. So we've got a lot of stuff coming up here. First of all, I just want to thank our sponsor, Extreme Auto and Truck in 14 Cunnilin Road, Gloucester, 281-0339. And I just want to say we have coming up on Unfinished Music, we have on the 28th of September, Ricky Diamond. He's going to be joined by Megan Wolf. We have on October 12th, we have Jeff Small and John Jerome. And then on the 26th of October, we have Chelsea Berry coming in.
Yay.
So if you have suggestions for future guests, contact me at 978-325-4543. Or at greg@gregverga.com. And check out our Facebook page at Unfinished Music. And certainly listen to us again on msonewsports.com. This show will be available for On Demand within moments. So thanks again to Steve Carraway. This is Greg Verga with Rick Moore at Unfinished Music.